Welcome, college hockey fans throughout the United States and Canada and the world. You are listening to the best college hockey radio show in the nation. We have Coach Dean Wilson, we have Doc Phil Johnson, and I'm the wise one, Jeff Bradall. Eddie Christian is still locked up at the airport someplace in Hawaii, not enjoying the sandy beach, but actually working. So before we start off talking about the college hockey playoffs, just give a couple house cleaning items here. 701-293-9000. 701-293-9000. Why? We want you to give us a call. Give us your prediction of tonight's game against the University of North Dakota versus Denver. Against Duluth. We got Denver versus Western Michigan. In the Big Ten, you got Michigan versus Penn State. Michigan State versus Ohio State. And in the CCHA, you have Michigan Tech versus Michigan State. Augustana versus St. Thomas. Or anything else that you want to talk about in the world of college hockey. 701-293-9000. And before we get rolling here, Dean, you had a very special person in your life who passed away this week. Visit about your good friend.
I appreciate that, Jeff. Really quick, you know, as a good friend of mine, Dale Lammy, was a former music teacher of the Fargo Public Schools. What a character, great guy, you know, hams to you, buddy, you know, if you knew him, he had a lot of spirit tied, connected with Master Corral and Concordia. Just a great, super guy. He's going to be missed. And I still tell the story about Jackson at Davies, the boy, and he said, you know, live life to your fullest. And there's an old saying, if you've lived it, life to its fullest, one time is enough. And he had a great time, great person to be around. And prayers and thoughts to you and your family, Dale.
You know, the fun thing about Dale is he loved to sing. He loved to play about every instrument without the instrument, but using his mouth. Tell the story about when you took him to Thunder Bay to visit your buddies and he entered a competition.
Well, we go to this place, and it was more prestigious, and it was less prestigious than it sounds, the Yacht Club. We go there. They have a competition to play an instrument. So Dale goes, I want to play. I go, Dale, you don't go to an instrument. I go, oh, yeah, I do. So I go to the guy. I go, this guy wants to play. I go, what's the instrument? He goes, he plays the trumpet, but he plays it with his mouth. And the guy goes, I really don't have the time of day for you. I said, give him a shot. So Dale gets up there. He wins the dang thing. He wins the whole dang competition. And I think we got a couple beer tickets and a T-shirt and a coupon to Tim Hortons. But, man, he won it all. It was good. But he was a character and he was fun to be around.
Hey, Doc, you got to listen to the song that won the competition for Dale. You got to just tell that story, Wills.
He knows these maritime songs. And down in Thunder Bay, Duluth, they got these sailor ports. You know, you go down, they're good vibe, right? And he's singing this song about this mouse comes out every night in this bar and all the sailors spill the whiskey on the floor. So that's where he gets his free whiskey. And by the end of the night, this mouse is singing and he goes, and he gets pretty lit up. And then the mouse says, bring on the doggone cat. Anyway, so it's one of his songs.
Well, rest his soul, and our sympathies to Dale's family who are in town, and your good friend Dean. I mean that, and
appreciate the time.
Yeah, you've talked about Dale over the years with me a lot, Doc. There's some good hockey to be played tonight.
Boy, you know there is, but did you look at what happened last night? Every ranked team but Boston College lost.
Quinnipiac, I saw that. Lost.
I mean it. It was kind of amazing. Princeton beat Union. Colgate even lost to Dartmouth. But look at Harvard. You know, they beat Cornell 3-1. So look out. Tonight could be interesting in a lot of different ways.
And we have Mike Schmidt, the officiating director for the NCHC, coming on at 9:15. And one of the questions that I want to ask him, Doc, is exactly what you mentioned, is with regard to the RPI and the rankings and the top 16, You know, we know that the league champion gets the automatic bid, but when there's teams that are knocked off, like you just mentioned, and it was a wild night last night, what happens to those teams? Is the RPI locked in place at the start of the league championship run, or when does it stop? And that's one of the questions I want to ask NCHC officiating director Mike Schmidt. You know, the one score, Doc, that I found interesting earlier on midweek was Ohio State 7-1 over Wisconsin. And that was the third time in a row that Ohio State has knocked off Wisconsin in the Big Ten tournament. That was a surprise, especially in Madison.
Well, you know, and Wisconsin had been kind of on a heater since they swept the Gophers. That was surprising. I mean, that was just a good old thumping. I think Wisconsin is still going to be in the tournament, you know, by their chinny chin chin, but boy, that was surprising. But, you know, maybe Ohio State is getting their mojo at this point. So it'll be interesting to see how they play, tonight.
But I just
love it. It's playoff time.
I agree. I just think it's a different vibe when you're playing in your own conference, right? Like the Big Ten and stuff. I mean, it's just, you know, you got that extra drive, that extra push. It's just a different vibe when you want to bump these guys out. So the scores, they catch you off guard. But I go, you know, they live to beat somebody in their conference.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
But when you take a look at the teams that have been rated in the top 16 throughout the whole year, the teams that we just rattled off that are, with the exception, I'll say, of the few that you had mentioned, Doc, but, boy, you got North Dakota, Duluth, Denver, Western Michigan. It would be a crying shame if one of those teams did not make the Sweet 16. And likewise with the Big Ten and – you know, Truth and Honesty Act here. I'm not a big Ten fan in light of what they did with the WCHA, but Michigan, Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan State. You look at those teams, it would be a shame if one of those four teams did not make the Sweet 16. And then you take a look at the CCHA. Michigan Tech is on the road to play Minnesota State in Mankato. Augustana on the road to play St. Thomas. And those four teams have been nipping at that Sweet 16 playoff hope and run all season long. And it's just their strength of schedule, which I think has given them some problems. But, boy, you take a look at those 16 teams that I just mentioned, and then you throw in the Hockey East, as you mentioned, Doc, early on, there's going to be some terrific teams that could go on the run and win a national championship that are not going to make the playoffs. And I've always been a huge proponent to say, increase the number of teams to compete in college hockey championship run. That has to happen, especially in the time and age when the old money is needed. They could do a one-and-done game for those number 16 through 20 or 20, whatever. 701-293-9000. We want to hear from you. We have NCHC official Mike Schmidt coming on. A lot of interesting questions to pose to him. You got Doc Johnson, Coach Dean Wilson, and I'm the wise one, the Hockey Guys. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Hockey Guys. Once again, we have the pleasure of visiting with the NCHC head of officials, the one, the only, Mike Schmidt. Mike, thank you for joining us again this morning. We have a lot of questions here for you.
Well, I'll see if I can answer any of them.
All right. How are the officials in the NCHC selected for the quarterfinals tonight? Because you look at North Dakota versus Duluth, that's going to be just a battle. You got Denver versus Western Michigan, and you know that's going to be a battle. How do you and the league determine who are going to be the officials tonight?
So it's a process, a year-long process, and it's probably the toughest time is the playoffs because I have 64 officials, and then when playoffs come, I got to go down to 16. So I'm telling all those other officials they're done for the year. I have six supervisors that work for me, and over the course of the year, they're supervising the games, and they do an eval on each individual official. And it's just the process over the season is what it is. And then, you know, we look at veterans, you know, versus the new guys. Last week I did have two new referees work the first playoffs ever. And I kind of look at last week, our first round, the best two out of three, is probably our toughest round of playoffs because going to this weekend, you're right, the games are going to be really wild and intense. But for all intents and purposes, all four teams playing this weekend are going to the NCAAs. So, you know, last weekend, the best two out of three was huge. And then what we do is I'll bring those 16 officials in, and then we evaluate how they did last week. We had supervisors at every game, and then we got to whittle it down to eight this week. And then we'll have to make that decision after tomorrow or tonight's games. I guess it is Saturday after tonight's games. I have a supervisor out in Denver. I'm in Grand Forks, and we will discuss that to see who goes on to the championship game next week. But it's a process that goes on all year long. It's evaluation by our supervisors and myself all year long.
And if you have a question, listeners out there, for Mike Schmidt, 701-293-9000, Director of Officiating for the NCHC, as long as your question is clean, we'll let Mike answer it. Mike, you mentioned that you brought the officials in. Do you actually bring them into the league office, or how does that work?
Well, what we do is, what do you mean, bring them in?
You had mentioned that you had a meeting with all of the officials from last weekend's game, and then whittled it down to eight.
Yeah, with our supervisors, we do it right away. Like when I was driving home last week from Grand Forks, I'm on the phone with the supervisors. Okay, how do we do this? You know, did this person work good with this individual? Do we split crews up, which we did? We now mix the crews up again. And then we'll do that via phone with supervisors. And then what we'll do is I will give every individual a call Sunday afternoon about working forward. And then I'll do the same thing tomorrow, make that same decision with our four guys moving on.
Hey, Schmitty Wilson here. So I always think of it as kind of like a dance partner. You know, you mix them up. Is that good? Because sometimes you just get a good feel doing a game with your partner or the crew, right? And then I think of, is a one bad call a deal breaker? Going, no, this guy's out because he's always looking over his shoulder, going, you know, to do that perfect game. Because players have bad games, good games, and officials, oh, doggone it, I missed that. So is that something you think is healthy to mix them up, shuffle them up like that?
Well, that's a good question. And last week for the quarterfinals, I did have them, like I said, I had a couple new guys work first playoffs ever. So I did put them with veteran individuals, and they did a great job. But it was interesting because my veterans, we had a couple situations where, you know, they had to make the call and my veteran stepped in. Not saying that the new guys didn't do a good job. It's just trying to get your feet wet in those situations. And then from here on out, we kind of we'll put the individuals together that are working with each other. So again, the guys are working together this weekend. The crew that moves on will be the same crew that, especially the referees, working together. But it's not a deal breaker during the season because, like I told every individual when we went to our 16 final guys, I had a conference call with everybody. Everybody made a mistake this year. Everybody does. And, you know, it's not one mistake is not a deal breaker. If you make two or three in a row. We had some, you know, big calls at the end of the game that probably didn't go the way I wanted. But no, just like you said, is, you know, players make mistakes. These guys make mistakes, and you have to give them the second chance, you know, to, you know, better themselves from that mistake.
You know, my observation this year with officials is that I like they do a lot of collaboration, you know, and I think of calls, and you know this from subjectively to objectively, what is for sure and what is a judgment call, but I love that they've been doing a great job of collaborating and I really thought in getting it right.
Yeah, and that's what we want our guys to do is to make sure we get it right. Again, we And in the show, we talked about video, which I'm not a big fan of. But, I mean, before you go, if you have to use the video, use the video. But at least get together and get it right. We've had a couple instances this year where we can basically pick the flag up that, you know, official saw a trip. And he puts his arm up because it looks like a trip from his angle. But literally, the stick is like 3 feet from the guy. So the other referee comes over and goes, hey, man, he did not get him. And we pick the flag up. We don't want to do that, you know, five times a game, but, you know, five times during the season it isn't bad. So, yeah, we got to get it right. You got to do what's right for the game at the end of the day.
Doc, go ahead. You're up.
Hey, Mike. Great to have you on again. I just wanted to say I really appreciated working with – it was your daughter-in-law that's in Minneapolis, right?
Yep, Michaela, yep.
Yeah, she worked with us with the World Junior Championships and did an awesome job. Really enjoyed my time with her. But, you know, I've got a couple questions. Is it necessary for the NCHC to continue with the 2 out of 3 best quarterfinal series? Everybody, I mean, not everybody, but it seems like we're gravitating a little bit more. The Big Ten's doing it where it's a quarterfinal one and done. And I can see the validity of that from an injury standpoint, because let's face it, right at this time of the year, all these guys are bumped and bruised and sore, and you know, and they're, you know, they've been beat up, especially in the NCHC all season long. They're just heavy body league. So, is there any thought? And I understand the ramifications financially and everything else, but is there any thought to just do a one quarterfinal game to try and take away some injury potentials with these teams that sometimes they're going to have to play 3 games before they get into the semifinals?
Yeah, I think it's going to be – this year's an experiment because, you know, we're not at the XL anymore. We're doing on-site.
Yep.
And I think the biggest thing is going to be is from the coaching standpoint, the injuries are a good factor in there, absolutely. But the thing is going to be is being off. Like, that's why the Big Ten moved now to their games. They just played on Wednesday. Is that, let's say, North Dakota last week, they're going to the NCAAs. There's no doubt. If North Dakota would have got beat last week, they would have been off until what? Till the end of March 26, 27. That's a long time off. So I think, you know, the factor is those two deals is that how much grind is it on the guys and then how much time off. So we'll see if a team ever – that does happen. Now, it didn't happen last weekend. All four of our teams are going to be the NCAAs are playing this weekend. I just – we'll have to wait for that one time when a team is sitting for like 2.5 weeks, 3 weeks before they go to the NCAAs. And who knows, if they go into the NCAAs, that first round get beat by a 16 or 14 seed, then that might change things. That's what happened with the Big Ten.
Mike, excuse me, Doc, did you have one more?
Well, I mean, you could move it. You could move the schedule up a little bit, you know, like what they did with the Big Ten. Yeah, they played on Wednesdays, you know, and
yeah.
I'm just, you know, throwing it out there because it's just one of those things because we've always done it that way, and that's the worst phrase in the world. I just that one.
Oh, yeah.
You know, is it time to maybe think a little bit differently, primarily just to take some wear and tear off the guys and make sure they're at their maximum potential by the time the real show starts?
Nope, I agree, and that's a good point because, like I said, all these teams playing this weekend are going to the NCAAs. I mean, as a coach, would you, you know, sit individual that's got to look, you know, come hurt? I don't know. I mean, that's a coach's decision. That's a good point.
You know, Mike, over the years, we've seen a huge difference in officiating from one league to another. Historically, when the WCHA was fully loaded with all the teams, it was a tough, rugged, heavy type play. Officiating was different. Well, out in Hockey East, it was the don't touch me, don't hit me too hard, or you're going to get a 10-minute game misconduct. How have you seen the affin? I know you watched the Big Ten. Your son, Mike, we're going to miss you. Can you hang on, Mike, just for the next period to answer this question?
Yeah, I can. No problem.
Well, we greatly appreciate it. 701-293-9000. We're visiting with the NCHC head of officials, Mike Schmidt. And in the third period coming up, we're going to hear from nice comments from Coach Dane Jackson about Fargo's own Ben Strinden, and also hear about Nick Saban's meeting at the White House about the status of college athletics. And we'll be back with the hockey guys right after this. Welcome back to the hockey guys. NCHC head of officials Mike Schmidt. I'll shorten my question. The differentiation between officiating in leagues historically over the years has been different. It's been ugly. Can you describe how the differentiation exists today and how the game is called by the on-ice officials from one league to another league?
I think it's gotten a lot better over the years. And I think one of the things is that myself, Marco Hunt, the director of officiating for CCHA, and Steve Piotrowski, the Big Ten, we use different officials. We intertwine our officials now. And so I think that gives consistency over our three leagues. I know Hockey East, the ECAC, does that a little bit. But I think it just goes into that there's more communication. Like next Tuesday, I'll meet with all the directors officiating. We'll go over the season. I think we've gotten closer, but I would like to see, and this is another segment, is I'd like to see just officials be NCAA officials, you know, not NCHC, not CCHA. Let's move them across the country and let's get that consistency across the board. But that's another discussion in the future.
May not be a bad idea. Go ahead, Doc.
You know, Mike, I want to put a positive spin on this. You know, oftentimes, you know, officials are taking the brunt of a bad call, which really wasn't a bad call, or they're just taking the heat for a game. I just want to say, I think that your officials, and not only just the NCHC, but college hockey officials in general, have become a lot better. And I really appreciate the fact you're not doing these 10-minute video reviews anymore that really slow the momentum of the game. But the one thing that I've noticed is that the officials are communicating to the coaches a little bit more, and I think that's a great idea. Just say, hey, this is what we saw, this is how we called it, and that's the way it is. And I think that really does help with taking temperature down on the game sometimes, especially between the coaches and the officials.
And I agree. And when I took over the position, that's one thing I wanted to do, Doc, because I wanted to get communication and not to be adversarial discussion, but discuss that, I think that has helped out, and the coaches do appreciate that more.
Mike Schmidt, director of officiating for the NCHC. We want to thank you for joining us this morning, and I want to echo what Doc just mentioned. The officiating in the NCHC this year, I think, has been the best I've seen in years. And I know, Mike, how much time and effort you put in to recruiting the best officials and monitoring those officials and critiquing them. There's a lot of effort that the NCHC does with regard to officiating that a lot of people don't know. And I want to thank you for your effort, and thank you for joining the hockey guys today, Mike. And enjoy the game tonight, would you?
I will. Appreciate it, guys. Always a pleasure.
Yeah, thanks, Mike.
This week during Coach Jackson's press conference, he had addressed a local boy, Ben Strinden. And we've talked about Ben a lot on the show this year because he's one of the leaders, the foundation of North Dakota hockey as a senior. And let's hear what Coach Jackson's comments were about senior captain Ben Strinden.
Yeah, Ben's been just an absolute anchor for us. He's such a sharp young guy. You know, he has so much presence to him. I think the main thing I've seen in Ben is just kind of a comfortability with the puck. Kind of the game seems to have slowed down for him. He's confident with it. He's poised with it. You know, he's always been kind of an elite skater, an elite shooter. I think now he's holding on to pucks longer. He's looking for the next play. He's comfortable. He knows he can kind of play with the body on him because he's such a powerful guy. So I just think that just being a little more relaxed with the puck and knowing that he's got a little bit more time to make a play has probably been the biggest difference I've seen with Ben.
You know, and I think, Doc, what goes along with that is his conditioning, winning the Ironman competition the fourth year in a row for North Dakota hockey, and just his development off ice to get stronger and better is just an epitome of someone who wants to be a successful person in life?
You know what the most important thing, I think, an attribute to, about Ben Strinden? He's a senior. You don't see that in this day and age, and I think that's what we're missing a lot. And you miss a lot of the development with those kids after they're a sophomore and they bolt off for the, you know, the minor leagues for a couple of years to get ready for the NHL. And we as fans miss out on that as well. And I think, I don't know what Coach Saban's going to say. I heard some of what he was saying at the White House. But, I mean, I think there's a couple of things that really stand out when you talk about, you know, Ben Strinden and his whole pathway that he's been on. He's the guy that is setting the culture in the room. He is sticking it out. He's been there for 4 years. He will probably be get a shot, you know, at a professional contract. You know, probably one of the minor league teams will pick him up, and they should. But I think it scores and it really emphasizes, you know, this day and age where we're all, it's all about the money and your NIL and all this stuff, which is just really kind of, I think, contaminating the product. We miss out as fans of a lot of, you know, development with these guys when they leave as a sophomore and they don't stick around for 2 years. Think about this. If we'd have had Jonathan Toews or TJ Oshie for the full 4 years, imagine the level of skill and things that we would have seen at that time and the great hockey as well. So kudos to Ben. I mean, I know he works really hard. It's been a tough year for him, obviously, but I think he's just in the epitome of what can be done if you stick around a program and have that commitment for the full 4 years. And he benefits from it, and we benefit from it as fans, seeing his development and how he contributes to the progress of the team.
You know, Doc, great comments about life and about Ben. And I'll just say for our listeners, after our show for years, Dr. Tom Strinden would come into our studio, grab a Hams beer and crack one, and we would sit around after the show, and some of our best shows were after our shows talking with Tom Strinden, who was a good man and a good friend who we've all known since he was in junior high school. But I want to now go to a White House conference held by President Trump. Whether you're for or against or whatever your political views are, it's irrelevant. But one of the individuals who spoke at the conference that dealt with the status of college athletics was the famous coach Nick Saban. And let's hear from Nick Saban right now.
Thank you, Mr. President, for the chance and the opportunity to be here to speak with you today. But I just want everybody to know that I'm just a football coach. I spent my life when we had the ball trying to get a first down, when they had the ball trying to get off the field on third down. So this is an unlikely position for me to be in to speak to such a distinguished group of people. Thank you. But I come here today with a question. What are the guiding principles for the future of college athletics, all athletics? I'm talking about football, basketball, Olympic sports, revenue, non-revenue, it doesn't matter. You know, my goal as a coach for my players, for our players, was to help them be more successful in life, that we would create an atmosphere and environment that would help them through personal development, academic support, 668 degrees and 17 years at Alabama, and help them develop a career as a football player. That was our goal, so that they were creating value in life and we were preparing them for their future past athletics. So what happened? You know, in this current system that we have, that became impossible to do because people, instead of making decisions about creating value for their future, they were making decisions about how much money could they make at whichever school they could go to or transfer to. So I think we have a challenge here today about the ramifications of this current system on how it helps players be successful in their future and how we can impact and create a system that will help and preserve the opportunity for student-athletes to be able to have success in their future beyond athletics. So we need to develop an effective system of revenue sharing, authentic name, image, and likeness, authentic being. You have marketing value, which now we have collectives, which just create opportunities, which just become pay for play. eligibility issues where we have guys playing 6, 7, and 8 years. So you have 25 and 26-year-old people playing against 18 and 19-year-olds, which is not healthy. Transfer rules, we have over 4,000 people in the portal. Fans don't like it. Support groups don't like it. It's not really healthy for players in graduation to transfer several times in your career. You really put yourself in a pickle in terms of your ability to graduate. So I think we need to come up with a system, and we obviously have to do it with the president's leadership and also with Congress probably, whether it's antitrust legislation or whatever it is, to allow student-athletes in all sports, including women's and Olympic sports, to enhance their quality of life while going to college, but still provide opportunity to advance themselves beyond their athletic career.
Doc, those are some very wise comments. Give me your 15-second reply to those comments.
I totally agree with Coach Saban, and I know he's out there on his own being the point man, but I honestly think that this has just gotten away from the NCAA and they don't know how to control it. You know, there's so much litigation that goes on if the NCAA changes a rule or tries to enforce a rule. And I think Coach Saban is right, and I hope that there will be dramatic change here in the future because it's a train that's just left the station and it's out of control, and somebody's got to rein it in somehow.
100%. It's going to take a cowboy riding a horse and a lasso to get that that issue rolled in. It's an ugly issue, and whether it can be resolved or not. But we'll be back with more of the Hockey Guys right after this. Welcome back to the Hockey Guys. Well, Coach Wilson, you heard my comments about Dane Jackson and Ben Strinden, Nick Saban. You heard Doc Phil also mentioning about those two subjects. Let's hear from you.
You know, my thoughts are this, you know, with Ben Strinden, I'm big on the apple from the tree. You think his dad didn't tell him that education's number one? And if you can play a little hockey in the way and catapult your career, and he's going to have an opportunity. He's done a crazy growth in his game. But, you know, the apple from the tree, I always got to bring up my father, you know, because you guys probably didn't know this. I was going pro in about four sports. And my dad, you knucklehead, you're going to school. You're going to school. And that's something, and it kind of segues into my talk about the clip that we had about the points that Saban said. I mean, to create an atmosphere and environment for academic success, preparing these athletes for the future. 7%, guys, we are 7% going to college. It's like 1-2% to go to the big leagues, pro. You're better off to win the Ed McMahon sweepstakes. It is not going to happen. You need something to fall back on. And when you're 18 years old, somebody throws out that cash flow at you. Are you thinking about your education? Pay to play, eligibility, 6, 7, 8 years to finish a college career. I mean, Doc, you're a doctorate. And, you know, and we used to smile, we're going to be a doctorate, it's 8 years, but not if you're getting just your undergrad. 25, 26-year-olds playing against 18-year-olds, you know, hanging around the open portal. 4,000 people last year were in the open portal. 4,000. They got to tidy it up, you know, maybe one move. The money, I mean, a cap, they got to tie it up. It's out of bounds, out of control. And I got a passion for this, but I go, and I love, I mean, when you're sitting down with the president going, we got an issue here. We got to clean this up. You know what I mean? The olden day, you went to college to get an education and play a little sports. If that was the leverage, like, not to speak for everybody, but maybe everybody. For me, that was motivation to go to college. But then when I got a little older and wiser, I found out there's a lot of people a lot better than I am. Maybe I better get this darn degree. And I did, because I had good guidance. I bring back Strinden again, you know. He had good guidance from his dad. He's a great student, too, and a great hockey player.
And don't forget his mother, the lieutenant governor of the great state of North Dakota. Is also a big role model for Ben. You know, Doc, your comments and Coach's comments, Coach Wilson's comments kind of encapsulates My same feelings. We're running out of time. We have to be out at 9:58, so we've got about 5 minutes here. Doc, your predictions tonight. North Dakota versus Duluth and Denver versus Western Michigan. Pick the winner.
North Dakota and Western Michigan.
Ooh. Dean, you're up.
I'm going to echo you, Dr. Phil. Same thing.
Well, this is for breakfast next Saturday, so I'm going to pick North Dakota, and I'm picking Denver. Because one of us has to buy lunch, either you two knuckleheads or me.
Hey, Dr. Phil, we might as well just say thank you right now, Jeff. Thank you.
Exactly. Yeah.
Thank you. Hey, I got to give a shout out really quick because, you know, you guys, Canada and the United States are playing in the Olympic sled hockey today. Shout out to Dave Hoff and his assistant Gorder, Botno Boys. I mean, Hoffer, he's got more goddamn gold medals than Mark Spitz does.
Well, I think he's North Dakota's most gold medals as a coach in Olympic history here in North Dakota.
Great guy, great staff. I wish him the best. Obviously, it's Canada, United States again. Maybe I could poof it next week. But he's got a great club, and he's just a great guy and great coach, and I want to wish him the best. I think I'm pretty sure it's at 11 o'clock today, our time.
Well, I texted him the last two Saturdays, Doc, saying, hey, can you come on at 9:15? And both last week and this week, he says, sorry, I can't. We play in an hour.
Yeah.
So, and then we got Michigan versus Penn State, and then you got Michigan State versus the Ohio State in the Big Ten. Doc, quickly, who's your selections?
The Michigan schools.
Wills.
God, I hate to do this, Doc, but you're good, man. I'm going both Michigan schools.
I'm going to take Penn State and Michigan State. CCHA.
Thanks again, Jeff, for breakfast. Two of them now, Doc.
CCHA, you got Michigan Tech versus Minnesota State and Augustana versus St. Thomas, the team coming into the NCHC next season. Doc.
Boy, St. Thomas, I got to think they're on a roll.
So you got St. Thomas, Michigan Tech versus Mankato, Minnesota State.
You know, they're at home, I think, right, at Mankato, so I think I got to go with the Mavericks.
Wills.
I hate to do the hat trick on you, Dr. Phil. I'm going the same route. I'll go Mankato and then, St. Thomas?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, Doc, you got the Thunder Bay boy up here just picking your teams, but I'm going to take Augustana over St. Thomas, and I'm going to take Michigan Tech over Minnesota State. So I'm taking both road teams.
Thank you.
In the CCHA, and I'll take a omelet with little taco meat. Throw some veggies in there. I don't know. It's going to be a great breakfast on you guys next Saturday.
I think just to put a little salt in the wound, I'll have a Denver omelet.
Hey, Doc, you here all week? Tip the bartenders. That's good. I like that one.
You know, it was good to hear from Mike Schmidt, the director officiating for the NCHC, talk about the parity right now in getting closer and officiating amongst the leagues. I don't like the idea about having NCAA officials. I like each league to have their own officials and manage them and run with them like the NCHC does and have individuals like Mike at the game site supervising. Wills.
You know, I like I said, I don't know. I think Schmidt's got a good vibe going, and I like mixing things up. I wanted to ask him this. You find now that it's been a little chippier in the pros? There's been some real flagrant violations up there lately of aggressiveness, and there was just somebody got a knee the other day or whatever, but I don't know. I think it's gotten a little aggressive, even though I don't know if I answered your question or not, Jeff.
Well,
personally, I think that would be a good idea. That I really do. I mean, doing as many of the international games that I've done over the last 15 years, that's a whole melting pot. They bring guys from all over the world together, and they make them, you know, kind of go by the same rules. I really think having just the – and I don't know if you want to go through the NCAA or not. I mean, who knows? But, I mean, I think having them under the same roof, that makes a lot of sense.